If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Welcome back to the show. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us on this Friday, May 22nd. We appreciate it. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez running the show right now. We're very happy, very excited to have our next guest on the show, Emmy-winning journalist and analyst. She has done so many great things over the course of her career and one of the best interviewers in the business, for sure. Very excited to have Andrea Kramer on the show. Andrea, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Stephen. Nice music choice. I am very impressed. I am very impressed by the subtleties of that music choice.
We have the best producer in the business. and he's known for his musical selection. So glad you caught that and glad you enjoyed that. And
thank you very much.
Really
quickly, how are you guys? Tell me how you are. I know your wonderful engineers is in the studio, but you guys are good. Everybody healthy?
You know what? We are. I'm still doing the show at home. I've been doing the show at home for this entire ordeal. My co-host Nate recently went back into the studio last week, and they're practicing social distancing. I'm 35, 40 miles away, so my social distancing is just perfect. But we've done the best way. We haven't missed a show. We've navigated our way through this, and so it's worked out all right. But thank you for asking. How about you? How has this entire situation over the past couple of months been for you?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, look, for me, it's a silver lining. I've got my son home from college. I'm not so sure how thrilled he is about finishing school online, but it's been, we're very, very grateful. We're all healthy, and it's been, I try to, I teach graduate school on top of all my other jobs, and one of the things I tell my students is you're learning skills that are really going to benefit you. And truthfully, in working on HBO Real Sports this month, I really learned that, because this is our new normal for now. And, with our show, the bar is so high that when people tune in, they want to see the kind of quality they're expecting. And it might look a little bit different, but it's not as though we're in the midst of a pandemic and all of a sudden, quality is going to go down. That's not the mentality. So I think learning new skills and learning how to navigate this is what we have to do, guys, if we're going to thrive, right?
All right. So what can you give us each a new skill that you've learned professionally through this? And maybe have you learned any new skill that's just like in your personal life, be it cooking or anything like that, through the course of this?
Oh, the cooking thing is a little scary. I am blessed with a husband who is a great cook and who loves to cook. And when I announced I was going to cook, my son looked at me and sort of had a mic drop moment, like, "Mom, are you feeling okay?" But no. I'm a good cook. I'm just very basic. On a professional level, we're still doing interviews, obviously, and now we do them remotely. And HBO, to its credit, they've outfitted the correspondents with as best of a professional studio as you can. You name it, the lights, the tech stuff, the cameras, tripods, everything, and you have to learn how to use it. I think what's been interesting for me is, in terms of doing interviews, and this is actually something that, because you guys work remotely in radio and the majority of your interviews are not in person, you're very used to this, but you can't, when you're doing something virtually, and there's even an infinitesimal delay, you can't jump in to react the way you normally would. You have to let the person finish, because overtalk just does not work via Zoom and via this virtual platform. So that's one tiny little thing that I have learned that's pretty important. And just, understanding that certainly not having the face-to-face connection, it might change the amount of time you can have with someone just before it just starts to kind of drop off, if you will. But again, you have to adjust, and that's what I think that we've done. And last month was the first real sports show since the you know, we were all pulled off the road and production had been shut down in March. And, I mean, I'm biased, obviously. I've been on the show for 13 years, but the level of journalism and it was just incredible with David Scott and John Franklin. They've got terrific stories again this month. Brian Gumbel, who's doing roundtables, you know, last month it was with the top play-by-play men in the major sports, and this month it's with the three heads of players' associations. So, you know, again, I just think it's a matter of adjusting, and I keep saying to anybody who's going to listen that anybody who's expecting things to go back to normal is going to get left behind. There's going to be new ways that we're all going to have to do things for the short term and really, guys, as you know, maybe even the long term as well.
Andrea Kramer's our guest. Before we get into what we'll see coming up on Tuesday night on HBO about Laurent Duvernay-Tardif as you revisit and update your story from 2018, I did want to ask you a broader question about Real Sports. I'm a huge fan of Real Sports. I love it, and I always love at the end of the year when everyone comes in with a round table and talks about the favorite or most impactful story of the year, and I look forward to it every month. It's just a fantastic show. And for you, like you said, 13 years and all the topics and interesting subjects that you've tackled over those years, Could you pick one or two of the most memorable segments, the most memorable interviews that you've done on Real Sports in the last decade and a half?
That's like asking me if I had multiple children, which is my favorite. I mean, that's not fair. But, you know, I think that that two do stick out. I mean, one in particular, which is a piece that we did several years ago, an investigation into sexual assault in Bikram yoga. And the two producers that I worked with, Maggie Burbank and Katie Malone, just did an absolutely incredible job. I mean, really, we worked on the piece for close to a year, tracking people down and culminating with an interview with Bikram Chowdhury, the founder of Bikram yoga, that we did in India that turned out to be very, you know, fairly controversial, very, very memorable. That was probably the most impactful story that I feel that I've done. And one of the other reasons, I mean, obviously it attracted a lot of attention for the work that went into it, but one of the things I was really proud of is that HBO was reached out to by sexual assault and domestic violence groups, basically saying, we've put your story on our, you know, must-watch list. So the idea that you might be doing something that could help other people through by virtue of your journalism and your investigation was really powerful. And then the other story that really comes to mind was one of the first stories I ever did for Real Sports, and ironically, it was produced by Ezra Edelman, who won the Academy Award for the O.J. in America series. You know, O.J. Ezra started was with us on Real Sports when I first started off. And we did a story on a high school basketball team in a polygamist community in Utah. And it was just crazy. I can't even begin to, you know, break that one down in terms of, you know, it was how sports was basically changing the culture of this incredibly insular society. But to me, that was a quintessential Real Sports piece because I hear all the time, I'll hear from people, I'll be in an airport, I'll be something, oh, I don't really like sports, but I love you, we love your show. And I think that's it, is that they, you know, we all manage, the producers do an incredible job, you know, finding these great stories that oftentimes may just have a tangential relationship to sports, but they're just great stories. And those are two that certainly come to mind for me.
Okay, so you talked about a couple of stories, particularly the Bikram story that is a pretty terrible story. You know, you're doing good work by exposing something that's I guess a negative thing that's happening in the world. The one that we're having you on today, you're telling a very uplifting story about one of our people here in Kansas City, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who is out there working on the front lines as a doctor. And we've covered that a lot in Kansas City, the fact that he'd been finishing up his med school the first few years of his Chiefs career. But I'm curious for you as a professional, I'm sure you have to try to stay as emotionally detached from these stories as possible, but do you enjoy covering, getting the chance to cover one that's a little more uplifting, or how does it affect you emotionally covering the stories like the ones you just described versus maybe covering one like this one that we're about to talk about?
Well, I think that obviously we're journalists, but we're human beings first, and we of course you can have empathy and different emotions during the course of a story, but you know our job, the way that I've seen it and viewed it for my 30 plus year career, is that let's just present the information, okay? Let's just present the story. Let's tell the story. Let's always tell both sides of it. You always have to be, you know, balanced in things, especially if you are doing an investigative piece, and present it enough so that the audience makes their determination. I think that it's really a credo of the show. The one time that we really can get some of our opinions out is in the crosstalk at the end of the show that we typically have in an update, as we'll have next month. You don't typically have that with Bryant, but Bryant will look at the story as though he's just a viewer, and he'll ask questions that come to mind for him and try to clarify some more information or delve a little bit deeper into something. And that's an opportunity that you can put forth your opinion. And I remember after the Bikram story, he said to me, you know, what do you tell the people who still want to practice this? And, you know, I was able to offer my thoughts on it that were just my opinions, and it wasn't rooted necessarily in journalism. But I think with Laurent, we profiled him, as you mentioned, 2 years ago. And the profiles that we do are so in-depth. You want to try to build a picture of somebody's backstory. Everybody's a product of their life experiences. What had he gone through that put him in the position that he's in now? And the funny thing, guys, is that we had planned to do an update based on him winning the Super Bowl. This is a great story. So we had a shoot set for March, and needless to say, that did not happen due to the breakout of the coronavirus. And all of a sudden, and at that point, he really wasn't doing anything in Canada on the front lines, but he did make the determination that, you know, he wanted to try to do whatever he could. And yes, he has his medical degree, but because he hasn't done his residency, there's only so much that he could do. But he felt strongly enough that he wanted to do whatever he could, because whatever he could provide could free up other members. So if he's working as an orderly or a nurse's assistant, that can free up nurses to do other things. And as he told me, he said, I know someone who is one of the top radiologists around, and he can't do anything right now because there's no elective surgeries. He's working in the same capacity I am. So there's nothing, there's no job, there's nothing that's sort of too quote unquote small for us to do to contribute, because we're helping everybody in the medical community. And I think that, as you'll see in the story, can't give everything away, guys. We want people to be able to watch and make their own determination.
That's right.
I think that, you know, what he found is that even in the capacity in which he's working, it's hard. It's really hard to see what people are going through. And he kept saying, I can only think of the doctors in the major cities in the U.S., for example, in New York or in Boston or something like that, who are going through this on a day-to-day basis. And you know, you can understand how impactful this is going to be on so many people. I mean, potentially for the rest of their lives, some of these frontline medical workers and these medical professionals.
Again, all of our listeners can watch Tuesday night, 9 o'clock Central on HBO. Then it'll be available on demand the next day, and it'll air several times. You'll get a chance to watch the new episode of Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. Okay, before we run out of time, I wanted to ask you about The Last Dance. I was glad to see you were a part of that. And what's been amazing to me is all the different discussions and arguments and debates that have come out of this. And Scottie Pippen's mad. Horace Grant's mad. Some people feel, okay, that cements it. Michael Jordan's greatest of all time. Other people, okay, that cements it. I despise Michael Jordan even when he was a jerk to everybody. Then you talk about the gambling, and you talk about what really happened in Game 5. All these discussion points. For somebody that lived it, and covered it, and then was part of this documentary, What's your main takeaway from revisiting everything that happened with the Bulls in this 10-episode drama?
All right, so just give me a ballpark. How old are you guys?
47. 44.
Okay, so how you were, so in the 90s, you paid attention to Michael Jordan. You knew who he was.
High school and college, it was our wheelhouse. It was our wheelhouse
of
sports fans.
And I was a huge Utah Jazz fan and John Stockton fan.
Sorry.
And I watched those. So I've never watched two playoff series more intently and been more heartbroken by what happened. But so I know.
Yes, you remember the daggers.
We watched it all.
The daggers that were thrown off.
Right.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. The reason I ask is because, pardon me, one of the biggest takeaways that I've had is talking to younger people, even people in their 30s who were kids, and they watch Michael Jordan, and they don't have any recollection about the power on and off the court that he exuded. And I kind of liken it in kind of a strange way to, it's like with John Madden. Everybody knows the Madden game. And they know that he was an announcer, yeah, boom, boom, boom. But they forget that he was this Hall of Fame coach. Well, similarly with Jordan, everybody knows the shoes. And, yeah, I think he owns a team now. And, of course, they know he's a Hall of Fame player, but they never watched him. I mean, I was at so many of those games that we saw video of. And even I'm sitting here and going, oh, my God, I still can't believe he did that. And to see the kind of player that he was as an athlete, as a basketball player, to, of course, get a sense as to, I've called him this, and I say it in the most complimentary of ways. He's the most ruthless competitor that I've been around in my 30-plus years of covering sports. And, as you alluded to, did he have to be this way? Here's how I view it, guys. If you can't handle what Michael Jordan's putting on you in practice, and the pressure that he's putting on, how are you going to handle it against the Utah Jazz in the championship series? How are you going to handle it with 20 seconds to go and you have to take that final shot, or you need that final rebound, or you need to post up, you need to block out, whatever it is? How are you going to handle it if you can't handle it in practice? And I think that it was very revelatory for people who hadn't been around him to get a sense as to what it was like, as well as, and, you know, I was very proud that I was used as much as I was in the show. And I'm very proud that Barack Obama and I were the final two non-NBA sound bites in the whole documentary. But as I said at the end, Jordan did this without the benefit of social media. There was no look at me that you get today, especially with athletes. He did this by the strength of his performance and his personality. And those are the takeaways that I have is sort of looking at this through the prism of younger people who never experienced it the way I did or grew up watching him the way you guys did.
So, guys, by the way, on this topic, Stephen, you talking about being a Jerry Sloan fan and a Utah Jazz fan, just minutes ago, Andrea, it was announced that Jerry Sloan has passed away. He's been battling Parkinson's and dementia. And he is a legendary figure and was obviously featured in that as well. How much time did you spend around him in your career?
Well, during all the playoff series, I mean, he was a gentleman. That's the first word that probably comes to mind for me about Jerry Sloan. It was different. I loved covering the NBA back then. I mean, I get so associated with football that people forget that when I joined ESPN in 1989 and opened their bureau in Chicago that I did primarily, the NBA. So, you know, working with the Jazz and you know, Malone and Stockton and all those guys. And yeah, Jerry was just, obviously an incredible coach, but just someone that you always felt treated you with respect, treated the game with respect as well. I'm so sorry to hear that. That's a big loss, obviously, out in that area.
Absolutely. One of the more, because he didn't win that championship, one of the more underrated coaches in NBA history, I think. Andrea, we appreciate your time. Before we run out of time, I did want to ask you, look, we are still celebrating the first Super Bowl championship in 50 years in Kansas City. And I know you talked about how you were going to revisit LDT because he won the Super Bowl. You've seen great players in all sports. We just talked about Jordan. and you've seen, what have you covered, 25 Super Bowls. We feel like, and this was a discussion, but we could be at the beginning of this maybe a decade of dominance or a decade of something special from Patrick Mahomes II. I'm just curious from your perspective, what you think of this kid and what he's accomplished so far in just a couple of years.
Well, it's one of those amazing partnerships, right? When you look at, I don't think you can separate out Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, and Andy being, in my opinion, the perfect coach for Patrick, both in terms of his personality as well as his offensive acumen and creativity. That's the thing, is that, you know, Andy has always been someone, you know, obviously the quarterbacks that he's had, success with, you know, Donovan in Philadelphia and comes to mind, of course, is, you know, he knows how to use players with the skill set. But none of them have anything close to what Mahomes does. And Mahomes has, you know, I've talked about this, it's that special something that you can't quantify necessarily with words, but when you see it and when you observe it, you know that he has it. And couple that with the fact that Patrick has come out and said, in essence, I kind of didn't even really know what I was doing. I didn't really know how to read defenses that well, and I would kind of wonder why Andy's doing something, but he always seemed to know the right thing to do. And now, once, in my opinion, Patrick gets that cerebral part to match this otherworldly athleticism, and couple that with Andy's creativity and, you know, all the offensive weapons they have, and they do look very, very unstoppable. And I think that a lot of times, you know, the cliche, heavy is the head that wears the crown. They're going to see how everybody's going to study them more than ever. Everybody's going to be looking for them more than ever. And it's hard to defend that championship, because if it wasn't, you'd have a lot more teams that had done it. So I think it's going to be a great season. Luckily, Mahomes is working so hard at this point, even in this crazy virtual offseason that they're having. But that's even more opportunity to develop what I call that cerebral part. So, you know, I was just you talk about having personal feelings. You've heard this so many times. So incredibly happy for Andy Reid, because he's earned this. He's earned this this opportunity to be called a Super Bowl champion. Didn't need it, in my opinion, to be a Hall of Fame coach. Completely cements it to have that title, and you just want to see what else he's going to do, because you know that as much as people are going to study them, Andy is going to have even more creative ways that he's going to be able to utilize these amazing weapons that he has in Kansas City's offense.
Okay, Andrea, last one for me, I promise, and we appreciate your time so much.
That's all right.
All the people that you've interviewed, all the great interviews you've done, is there one sports figure that you haven't interviewed, if you were asked, pick anyone that you could sit down with for an hour, no holds barred, ask anything, just sit down and do what you do, who would it be?
Oh my goodness. Wow, that's difficult. Because there's so many people out there that you'd want to talk to. I thought you were going to ask me the same question about who have I interviewed that sticks out. I will tell you this. I've always said I've had the pleasure, privilege, and pressure of covering the two greatest Michaels in all of sports, one of whom we've already been discussing, Michael Jordan. The other one is Michael Phelps. And, you know, the work that I did with all the Olympics, including Beijing, which was pretty, you know, still probably the most amazing event that I've covered over my career was Phelps winning 8 gold medals and an individual accomplishment I don't think we'll ever see in my lifetime again. But boy, who is out there that I would?
You've pretty much talked to everybody. It's tough to find someone of importance that you haven't talked to.
Because you'd really like to. You see, because there's a difference here, guys. There's a difference between if you guarantee me they're going to sit down, are you guaranteeing me that I'm going to be able to use truth serum on them too?
Yes.
Because a lot of times that you want to talk to people, but you know that they're protecting an image or anything like that. I mean, you know, Colin Kaepernick, Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, Peyton Manning just, you know, come to mind about, how honest are you going to be and how much are you going to be trying to protect and foster a certain image that that you do have? So I think that it's difficult in this day and age to get that. You know, one of the things I was really proud of with Jordan is being there through the good, the bad, and the ugly, and being there when he came back from Atlantic City after the gambling trip that he made, and going down to North Carolina when he testified in the Slim Buller trial, and schlepping to Birmingham when he played for the Barons. And, you know, I am very proud that when he came back to basketball, I did the first interview with him when he did so. And part of that was because I was there for these various events, and I feel like I was an honest broker with him. He knew what he was going to get with me. So I was proud of things like that, and I would certainly revel in the opportunity to be able to sit down with some of those other folks that I just mentioned today. But again, different time. When you have social media and you can do it all by yourself, why do you want to put yourself in a position to sit down with a journalist?
That's a great point, Andrea. It's been awesome. Nate, any final words for Andrea Kramer before we let her go?
No, I just really appreciate the time, and I'm excited to watch this piece. You know, thanks for joining us. This was great.
It's my pleasure, you guys. And you know, keep up the great work, and for you and your families and all of your listeners, everybody be healthy, be safe, be smart out there. And I will look forward to hopefully getting out to Kansas City, because we know what that means. But for now, everybody, and we forget it's a holiday weekend. Every day is Groundhog Day. So enjoy your holiday weekend, and thank you so much for the great conversation.
And you really are one of the best in the business. We're big fans, and just love everything you've done. So thank you so much for spending some time with us in KC. Thank you.
All right, guys. Take good care now.
That is Andrea Kramer. Good stuff. Great stuff. I could have obviously I could have talked to her all day, and I almost did. Ah, well, what do you want me to do? Yeah.
She's awesome.
Was I geeking out?
No, only in a good way.
Sports all the time. And they do tackle some topics that are extremely difficult to talk about and to watch, but they do a great job. But they also have, I mean, it's just, if you're a sports fan, it's a must watch. So I'm looking for Tuesday night, 9:00 Central. So thank you, Jake, for making that happen. That's a, you know what that is? It's a feather in your cap, buddy.
Oh, thank you guys for doing a great job. That's a great interview. That's a great listener.
I want you to take full credit, because you made this happen, and just because of that, I'm giving you the weekend off. How's that sound?
Oh, man, even Monday?
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
You can thank me for that. All right.
You have the authority to do that?
Thank you,
Sure
Steven.
I don't.
Oh, man. That's the best news I've heard in the last 5 minutes.
After staying at home for the past couple of months, I realize I have the authority to do nothing. I have no authority over anyone or anything, including the pets. So Steven knows his place in the world now. Thankfully, I've realized that before it's too late. Back after this on WHB.